Hello and welcome to MLW Confusion. I'm your host, Rob Cameron, bringing you all that you may or may not need to know about Major League Wrestling and its television programming. This week we have Super Fight, all the big crazy changes that threaten to explode the landscape of Major League Wrestling. Just like they crammed it all into like one night. We got title changes, returns, many returns, crazy dream matches set up for the future. But first, the news. Spoiler alert, not being content just to hold one championship, new MLW World Heavyweight Champion Satoshi Kojima is stepping in the ring into the tag team division with his good friend and corner man, Shigeo Okamura. They are forming a tag team known as Cozy Max and moving into the tag team division. It's going to be crazy go nuts, possible dual champions. We'll see how they fit into the tag team division landscape. Do they get to just jump and cut in line like everybody else? Never mind that Wasted Youth is in the background wrestling trios matches, despite technically being the rightful number one contenders. Who knows? But I guess we're going to find out here in the next couple of weeks or so. How about that? Speaking of our new world champion, assigned for the Intimidation Games is going to be Satoshi Kojima taking on Minoru Suzuki. Oh, for me, a veritable dream match. I mean, it's probably occurred. I haven't done my research yet on it, but probably occurred. But two of my favorites from New Japan looking to tie up for the World Heavyweight Championship. So I am psyched. Hook this to my veins. That is what I've said on social media, and that is what I continue to say right now. Also, coming to Intimidation Games, Bobby Fish is making his return to MLW. We saw him previously in the Opera Cup tournament year before or so. Time means nothing for me, but Fish is back. Solid hand to have in any one of your divisions or on your roster. I know we kind of... the internet wrestling community kind of like make fun of him just for, you know, being Bobby Fish. But the dude wrestles good, and there's a bunch of solid matchups for him to be had in the MLW ring. Also, making their debut at the War Chamber event March 29th, Unagi Sayaka, free agent, freelancer from Japan. She is coming in to bolster the featherweight division. She was part of Stardom, excuse me. I can't get that word out of my mouth. Being one of the promotion's Artist of Stardom champions and one of the longest reigning trios champions in the company. So that's a great get for the featherweight division. Hopefully she sticks around a bit because... I mean, let's face it, the MLW featherweights have been bringing in like some very good competition, but I do think we need to be focusing on like the core of our division, and they've done all right with that, but they're not getting quite the marquee matchups as the people that they're bringing in from, from Japan and TJPW, et cetera, et cetera. Also, as announced at Super Fight, we have a middleweight championship fight for the Intimidation Games, February 29th. This is going to be at New York City, the Melrose Ballroom. It is going to be El Jefe's Místico taking on Selena De La Renta's Rocky Romero. He is the current middleweight champion. Spoiler alert, defeating Ichiban. We'll get to that here in a bit. So it looks like the next challenge from Cesar Duran, who also returned. Spoiler alert. Oh, there's nothing but spoilers here because they're just... They've already weaved their way into storylines here. We're moving on from Ichiban. No longer a thing. Sad face. But he'll always be number one in our hearts. So our current card for the Intimidation Games is the heavyweight championship match. Satoshi Kojima taking on Minoru Suzuki. Match just announced. Rocky Romero taking on Místico. And the return of Bobby Fish. So, that takes care of it. Let's jump over to my previously recorded comments. By previously recorded, I recorded them like pretty fresh off of Fightland, so it's a couple days in the can. But hey, Rob, take it away. All right, let's get down to it. MLW Super Fight. Let's hope we pick things up compared to Kings of Controversy, I mean Coliseum, or the rather lackluster, in my humble opinion, Reload. So let's get down to it. We are Welcome to the Show by Joe Dombrowski, and what's this? No more Matt Stryker? Instead, we have Christian Cole joining Joe tonight. I, for one, am thoroughly content with this change. I know a lot of people don't like Stryker because just they don't like his styling, but honestly, after his gaffe last month, whether it was fed to him, but the fact that he just doubled down on everything, and oh, maybe he had his own allegation against him, like right after he started getting smug about things. Either way, he is off the show tonight. Whether that's a permanent change or a temporary one, we'll see, but whatever, man, let's just get through tonight and we can worry about tomorrow. It looks like our first match is going to be some lucha, but not the lucha attraction. Ichiban challenges Rocky Romero with Selena De La Renta for the MLW Middleweight Championship in a 2 out of 3 falls match. Ricardo, of course, is the one to be doing the introducing of Rocky Romero. During this introduction, though, we have some screen grabs of the Contra flag, and we can see a lucha goon wandering out from behind the stage. So they're going to play a part, at least visually, in this here match tonight. We have an extended feeling out process. In the process of it all, though, Ichiban gets sent outside. He blocks a Tope Suicida from Rocky Romero and hits a suplex on the arena floor. Back in the ring, we go back up to the top rope, and Romero falls Wow, I jumped everything because that's how fast the action was moving. Most professional podcast, of course. So inside the ring, Rocky dodges the one punches in the corner, hits a backcracker. We go back upstairs because we didn't learn our lesson the first time. Now Rocky is falling on top of Ichiban off the top rope, right next to the ropes, though. So Ricardo grabs Ichiban's foot, preventing him from kicking out. And that is our first fall. First fall, 1-0 Rocky Romero. At this point now, Ichiban has to win 2 straight falls to get the victory. There isn't really much of a break period for this year match. We kind of just jump right into things even after the first fall. Rocky is maintaining control, working over the lower back of Ichiban. Hits a modified straight jacket. It gets reversed a handful of times. But a sidekick gets some space for Ichiban. A handspring elbow and a missile drop kick and a high boss crossbody continues the momentum for Ichiban. Only gets 2 off of that, though. Rocky tries to do a feint through the ropes, and Ichiban doesn't fall for it this time. It kicks Rocky in the head, rolling him to the outside. Topek on Elo, crowd's on fire. Inside the ring, Ichiban, Kai, crowd goes wild. Second fall, Ichiban. Things are tied up 1-1. We are now in our sudden death fall. Ichiban takes the lead, backing Rocky in the corner, just going nuts. The ref just arbitrarily just drags him out of the corner. I assume it's a 5-count violation, which actually should be a DQ, but without like anything going on with it, it just seems random and biased because he's a referee. Commentary does put over the 5-count rule, which again should have been a disqualification, not a, you know, drag him out by his pants situation. But it gives Rocky a moment to breathe. Only a moment, though, because we get the one punches and get some training, some elbows in the corner. Well, opposite corners anyway. Ichiban gets caught in a backbreaker and a tornado DDT for 2. Super play by Ichiban evens the playing field. Ricardo looks to run interference. He gets knocked off the apron for his efforts, but Romero gets the opportunity to roll up Ichiban for a close 2 count. Ichiban hits a flipping pile driver off the middle rope for 2. There we go. We're going to start our pile driver count for the night. So that is 1 pile driver. We are on the ring apron, arbitrarily trading some blows. We finish it off with a suplex by Romero on the ring apron itself. And if no one's ever told you, that is the hardest part of the ring, ladies and gentlemen. Inside the ring, we have sliced Rocky at only gets 2. Rocky is stunned. He goes up to the top rope and hits an avalanche sliced Rocky. That only gets 2 as well. Things have gone nuts. Cats and dogs living together in harmony, etc. Ichiban is fired up. We got a big roundhouse kick and an inverted pile driver. Crunchy, so I'm not going to count as a true pile driver. But thanks to Crunchy, Romero retains. Before we get into the aftermath, I'll talk about the thoughts of this here match. It was a very good match. Thoroughly enjoyed it. Both men, you know, work their butts off to entertain the crowd. If I have to make one complaint, I feel like, I mean, the story may not be over, but like this is kind of like, kind of like the Love Doug blindfold match. This is kind of a match to blow off a feud. And either A, we're not blowing off the feud, or I feel like the logical conclusion to this feud is, you know, Ichiban overcoming the odds. They've always played the numbers game, and now we have a numbers match. And Ichiban fell short, so Rocky retains. And I'm not going to say Rocky's a bad champion by any means, and he's represented the belt well, because he actually wears it to other high-profile promotions that, well, allow him to do it. So, you know, it's not necessarily unwise to keep the belt on him, but from a storyline narrative, I do think it made more sense for Ichiban to pick up the win. Do I think it's going to hurt business in any way, shape, or form? Oh, no, of course not. Is this actually going to be, like, a net negative for things? Probably not. This is just me nitpicking things. The feud otherwise has been, like, straight fire. It's been a really good feud, obviously. And the two of them put on good matches together. It's just, you know, one of those things where, like, the payoff was, if this is the payoff, which should be the logical conclusion to the payoff of playing a numbers game, you know, that part just didn't quite make sense. But, yeah, we're not actually done here. So, we're getting ready to wander our way up the stage to the back. Rocky's, you know, shimmying his shoulders. Selena's talking crap. And they actually spot the Lucha Goon. And Selena just loses her shit, man. Goes after the Lucha dude, slaps him, takes him down, slapping away, like screaming at him. Rocky and Jesus are trying to drag her away, she's screaming, doesn't want to be touched, she's busy beating on a Lucha Goon and whatnot. So yeah, things have picked up with the Lucha Goons and Selena De La Renta. We are getting physical, ladies and gentlemen, physical. Following this here match, we got a hype video for Satoshi Kojima, kind of leading up to his match with Alex Kane. They're really hyping up that he is a former MLW champion, and there has not been a two-time MLW champion up to this point, but also putting over his interactions lately with Alex Kane, because Alex Kane interrupted the press conference in the stairwell and just said some disparaging things about Kojima in general. However, before we get to that match, because that match is the main event, and we got a ways to go, ladies and gentlemen, we have our certified hoss fight. Davey Boy Smith Jr. with Mr. St. Laurent makes his return to MLW. He is taking on the one called Vanders. Davey Boy has been out for a bit with a bout of diverticulitis and or appendicitis. He was actually scheduled for a match with Alex Kane, and they had to cancel that specific match, and they found a replacement because, like, that's how fast, like, how acute all these symptoms were, and it was like an emergency surgery to get Davey Boy in. But Davey Boy's back. He's hopefully in good health. Obviously, he's worked well enough to get things clear. So let's see how he works in ring, how much ring rust he may or may not have. He is wearing his dad's finest gear from 2000. Manders, well, looks like a sack of potatoes as per usual. So let's get this show on the road. Manders starts the party off hot. Like, as soon as the bell rings, just goes after Davey Boy. But Davey Boy, the much larger individual, just kind of cuts him off at the past. Though we go outside, Manders hits a diving shoulder block off the apron. Don't need to note that it was the hardest part of the ring because he didn't actually land on the ring apron. He just jumped off of it, of course. However, Davey Boy hits a suplex on the floor and then sends Manders into the guardrail. Inside the ring, the crowd is willing Manders to come back so they can trade strikes. Manders does. He loses that battle. Side suplex for two, followed up by a batch of MMA-style elbows that opens Manders up, possibly the hard way. But Davey Boy's just raining the elbows down. Manders has got a cut, I don't know, a couple inches above his left eye. So Manders is bleeding at this point. We go outside again. again, and Davy Boy bites the wound. The crowd is eating that up, pun intended. Davy Boy is just blood dripping off his face. It's not his own blood. It's kind of a sick visual. I need to go back and get like a screen cap of that because he looks crazy. He looks like he could cut somebody with his teeth after he's done cutting you with his elbows. We go back into the ring. Davy Boy works the wound. Finally, Manders counters a pile driver attempt. We get a strike battle, which Manders finally wins that. He gets cut off at the ropes, though. Super play only gets two. Davy Boy then locks in and hits a pile driver. Only gets two off that, and so that's a two count right there. So if I was getting a nickel for every time someone kicked out of a proper pile driver, I would have two dimes, which isn't a lot, but I'm just saying I shouldn't have any dimes right now. No dimes. No dimes at all. However, after the pile driver kicked out, Manders is locked in a crossface. Ref's really in there trying to make sure Manders is, well, safe as you can be, having your neck cranked. Manders flips off the referee. Finally, something we can agree in, dealing with that ref bias, before passing out. The match is over. Ref calls it. Your winner, Davy Boy Smith Jr. We'll cut it off real quick here to get some thoughts, and then we'll talk about the aftermath, or explain the aftermath. But yeah, this match was a certified hoss fight. Really worked hard to put Davy Boy over as this sadistic animal, quasi pun intended. He's a bulldog, get it? Ha ha ha. But also the fact that he's, you know, really aligned himself with WTF and Mr. Saint Laurent. But yeah, match was a certified hoss fight. Lots of hard hitting action. Like, as much as I slack on Manders, like, I didn't expect this match not to be decent. Like, they were just two men clubbing each other with big meaty blows. And I was actually impressed that, like, we got some color without, like, total visible blading, and off something that wasn't necessarily weapons related as well. So that was somewhat refreshing and gave like more of a legitimate MMA feel to it, even though the match by no stretch of the imagination was an MMA rules or anything of the like, but it just did seem a bit more realistic without going into the John Moxley I'm going to bleed because you looked at me during a match kind of thing. But yeah, did the right guy win? Oh, probably. I say it almost weekly that WTF really needs signature wins. And I'm not going to say this is necessarily a signature win, but it's been a little bit since they've had a proper win on paper as well. So that's a good step in the right direction. And of course, we want to solidify Davy Boy Smith Jr. as he's coming back to work, hopefully full-time, with a big win as well. And, you know, I slag on Manders an awful lot, and I will continue to do so because he's a terrible person and a menace. However, he is also, despite my ranting, one half of the MLW Tag Team Champions, so he is at least quasi-holding his own to get gold because, you know, teamwork makes the dream work, even if one guy is superior in almost every single aspect. However, we aren't done with the action. So after the bell rings, Davy Boy keeps going after the blood of Manders, giving him a good lick for measure as well, being really, really kind of gross. Christian Cole gets a mic and goes to talk to MSL. They are going to demand some gold. They beat one half of the tag team champions, so they want a tag team title shot. He hasn't said which one will be Davy Boy's partner. But really, he should have to get in line for that because Wasted Youth is technically the number one contenders. But now that I say that out loud and someone's going to hear it, Wasted Youth is going to lose a match to WTF and lose the number one contendership, and I apologize to everyone for that. I didn't mean to bring that out into the ether, of course. And then they give Davy Boy the mic. He hates the people of Philly. They're gross. And then in a move that I'm still trying to figure out, given the look on his face, I'm still trying to figure out whether this is completely tone deaf or if this is like his way of just saying F you to the parties involved. But he actually quotes John Laurinaitis. He quotes Johnny Ace, the infamous promo where you say, if you don't got it, get it, and you don't get it, figure it out. Like, yeah, like, again, like, that tongue might have been firmly in cheek, but I can't tell. And if I can't tell, and I'm dry AF at times, like, it may not be the best metrics to have. Luckily, it's such like an obscure thing. I don't know how many people noticed it until I said it out loud, too. So sorry about bringing that into the ether as well. Oh, but since we're out in the ether, let's go take a break. Let's go get an energy drink or something of the like. Start a website. I don't know. Get drunk. Play ping pong. I'll be back. Un momento. If you're like me, sometimes you need a pick-me-up to get you through the day. I drink Ray's Energy for that pickup. Ray's comes in a bunch of different flavors, and more recently, Italian Ice, which is great, by the way. And it contains no sugar, so there's no crash after you drink it. And really, like, best of all, if you go through me and go to wetrepsports.com, use my code CASS, you get 15% off your order. So, also, be like CASS, drink Ray's Energy. All right, we are back. Here is our special dream match. It is Jacob Fatu taking on Yuji Nagata. This potentially is Fatu's swan song because it has been announced that at the time of this recording last night, Fatu is a free agent. Of course, it does not necessarily preclude him from, you know, continuing to work with MLW. He can re-sign with MLW. He can work on a, you know, pay per appearance type contract. He could work there without a contract. You know, the important thing is he is a pure freelancer at this point. So we'll see where he's going to go from here. But right now he's got himself Japanese legend, Blue Justice, Yuji Nagata. And we start off with a feeling out process with Fatu taking, I don't know why I said, Fatu takes over, at least initially, because for no good reason, Nagata's like, I'm a heel now, and cheap shots Fatu in the ropes, does start working over Fatu's arm, eliminating a chunk of that power-based offense, specifically the right arm. Fatu fights through the pain, hits the handspring moonsault, only gets two off of that, which I question how does that happen when, your arms hurt. You know, wrestling psychology, hoax. It's sometimes kind of important. Nagata does come back enough to hit an exploder for two. Follows it up with an armbar. Fatu gets to the rope though. They are trading kicks. And Fatu's like, nah, I don't want to kick anymore since I'm not doing a super kick. So he hits the alley-oos, goes up and hits the double jump moonsault and gets the three count. Fatu wins the dream match and is a good way to send him off. This wasn't the barn burner I think some people expected it to be, but it was quick and to the point. Not every match needs to be a marathon to be good. I don't know, that's my way of spinning it, I guess. No, it was a totally serviceable match. A nice high note for Fatu to leave the company on. But wait, there's more. We get the music that we haven't heard in forever. It is Contra. The Sendai Death Squad start coming out. There's a whole bunch of them. There's more of them than there ever really was during Contra's heyday, really. But they haven't gotten any better in the process. Fatu just takes them out pretty handedly. Then up on the stage, a mysterious figure emerges, and it is Mads Kruger, the Black Hand of Contra himself, the last bastion of Contra, really, before he was defeated nearly 2 years ago by Fatu in that Weapons of Mass Destruction match. He sends out more Sendai Death Squad. They do get the better. The numbers game is finally too much for Fatu. They hold him down, like, over another Sendai. Sendai, like, gets down on his hands and knees, and they, like, hand him, like, lay him over, almost like they're ready to behead him. Fatu is mostly motionless. His Kruger kind of like takes his time to survey the situation, takes out his Baclay stick, his shillelagh, and just donks Fatu on the back of the head, knocking him unconscious. So we are going to have the return of Mads Kruger and Contra. I'm glad to see Mads back. Am I excited for Contra? I mean, potentially. But we are getting really heel stable-y, especially for heel stables that kind of want to take over things. Like, if Contra comes back as the proper unit, that's three heel stables that are bent on the conquering of MLW. We're not even talking about, like, the signs of Azteca Lucha coming back. So I think that could be interesting. So as a whole, like I feel like it'd probably be the best interest for Kruger unless they're going to do something real with it to drop the whole Contra, like drop a lot of the Contra stuff that goes along with him, as sad as it is, because I mean, let's be realistic. The heart and soul of that was Fatu and Joseph Samael, and neither of them are go either A, neither of them are going to be with the company as of this moment, or B, you know, is still just gonna be five, it's still just gonna be Kruger, and you don't need the rest of the accoutrement, especially if they're just gonna be a bunch of nameless ghouls. It only works for Ghost. All right, so following this, we get our hype video for the Akira calling feud. Akira has kind of gone his own way, and by kind of gone his own way, of course, I mean he was forcefully expelled from the group after questioning the leadership of Ricky Shane Page. Sami Callihan was brought in to, you know, help boost the stable, become its new leader in the absence of Raven. So that is leading up to this here match in a Callahan rules match. So basically just means there are no rules. It is a excuse me, it's a death machine rules technically. So there are no rules. It is a death match for all intensive purposes, or a hardcore match, however you want to, you know, phrase it. But bell rings. Akira starts off hot, but the best way to end a hot streak is to be taken to Dick Punch City. We got ourselves a low blow and a pile driver for two. Pile driver count. We are up to 3. 15 cents, and when I should have none, ladies and gentlemen. Here's the part, like, I snicker, but it also bothers me just because these spots always bother me. For being such a, like, hardcore deathmatch fan, like, paper cut spots bother me quite a bit. And somehow Callahan got his hands on an Akira 8x10 and used it to paper cut Akira's fingers and his mouth. Goes out and finds a lemon and squeezes lemon juice into the wounds. Akira's rolling around screaming. We got a broom and chair in play that's used on Akira. Barbed wire baseball bat is brought out, but the first person who gets hit with that is Callahan. Callahan recovers enough to go snot on Joe, and that's all gross, and Joe is disgusted by it, as he should be. Akira cannonballs Callahan through the ring board. I'm not entirely sure how I got through that little phrase right there. Not that I got through it well, but I got through it without a super stutter restarting it. Akira then like mists lotion into Callahan's eyes. Crazy go nuts. Haven't seen that spot in a bit. We have a staple gun fight. Akira gets two staple guns, brings them both in the wing, slides one to Callahan, and then they just have this here standoff that just evolves into taking turns stapling each other in various spots before Callahan is stapled right in the dick. However, Callahan doesn't care ultimately, hits a DVD onto a chair with cans of Coke, only gets a two count out of that. Akira double stomps kind of into Callahan, into a barbed wire assisted Muda Lock. Can't read my own handwriting on that, so that was nifty. Gets him in a modified like STF with the bridge, but instead of using his hands, he has the spool of barbed wire and has it wrapped around Callahan's face. Callahan breaks out of that though. Lariat and Brainbuster combo by Callahan only gets one. Akira is psyched, but you know the best way to end a little psyched segment is to get hit by a pile driver. This one actually finishes it, the short, quick pile driver, Foley style. Pile drivers are 1 for 4 on the evening. However, Callahan is your winner. And I will put over, like, this match is going to be for everyone because the whole deathmatch thing, and some really gross spots. That being said, like, I thought it was decent. Like, they didn't go crazy overboard. Like, there wasn't a whole lot of blood or anything like that. Like, the spots that hurt the most were actually probably the overall, like, the least painful and definitely the least damaging overall. So I don't think like there's anything too much to complain about. It was a little bit slow, but that's fine because the high spots, I think the tension from the high spots totally make up for it on that. But really, like a lot of this show, don't worry, there is more. So the rest of the calling to come out to celebrate with Callahan, they point to the after tying up Akira to the ropes, they point at the screen or the stage, and lo and behold, Raven makes his return. Raven is out. He comes to the ring. They give him a kendo stick. He teases that he's going to hit Akira, and he turns around and just thwacks everybody. Everybody gets a kendo stick except for Akira. Raven has turned on the calling and now stands in the ring with Akira. They both hit the signature Raven pose as we move on to our next announcements / segments. So Crazy Yo Nuts Raven is back, at least for this event. We'll see how long this lasts, because he was such a signature part of the calling originally and then just kind of effed off and into the ether. But anyway, it has been announced that Minoru Suzuki's opponent for Intimidation Games has been announced. Suzuki has been previously announced to be participating at the event, didn't give an opponent, but now we have an opponent for him, and that is Satoshi Kojima. New Japan fight happening on American soil at Intimidation Games. Following this, we have Mads Kruger. He gets some promo time on here, gets a video. Knows that he's been biding his time for 2 years, and on February 17th, he is going to put Jacob Fatu to rest. After this, we get our proper Lucha exhibition as Averto takes on Místico. Selena gets on the mic. She's putting, you know, some promotional Misterado over, Averno over, and she is interrupted by the one, the only Cesar Duran. That is right. The former Dario Cueto is back on our television screens. I mean, we kind of assumed it was coming with the Lucha Goons and the whole fact that they named a show Azteca Lucha this May. But Cesar is back. He wants to know who wants violence. He's going to give it to us right now and introduces Místico. He was responsible for bringing Místico back, or bringing Místico in, and he is back. So we got ourselves a lucha match, which we knew was coming. Back and forth action, jockeying for position, trying to show off those good lucha moves. Místico sent to the floor outside the ring. Místico is tossed, like powerbombed, into the ring post by Averno. Remember when Enzo Amore, or the real one, used to do that and used to kill people? Those are good days, right? I don't know, maybe. Inside the ring, though, Averno maintains his control. Místico comes back with a 619, a springboard Hurricane Rana, suicide dive, but Averno sneaks attack off of a Selena Cesar standoff outside of the ring. Averno got a cut above his eye. And somewhere in the process of all this, like, when they come back into the ring, like, you see him bleeding just a wee bit, nothing major in that one. Místico starts flying about the ring, and remember, folks, at one point in time, like, he was arguably the best high flyer in the world, like, 15 years ago. The dude's trying to make a comeback hardcore, and he's shown he can still go. Takes two Yoshi tonics. Both of them are kicked out of by two. Averno hits a topic on Elo. He flies around a little bit. Catches Místico for a powerbomb. Gets a two count off that. Averno locks in a cross arm breaker. Místico gets to the ropes, and the ref, like, almost, like, missed it in its entirety. Like, even like, Selena and Ricardo, or Jesus, excuse me, were, like, trying to cheat. The ref, like, just didn't see any of it. Like, didn't see him touch the ropes, didn't see them interfere, didn't see Místico touch the ropes again. Does finally notice and calls for the rope break. Get the devil's wings, the modified angel's wings, sit out double arm face buster, for those of you who don't know what either of the former two moves are. Gets a two count, but that's because there's really lackadaisical cover. He wasn't pinning anybody off that. Back and forth action. They trade clothesline. We get a super play for two, followed up by an avalanche devil's wings. That only gets a two count on that. Averno is incensed. He can't believe what's going on. This allows Místico to get one up on the mind games. Hits La Mística, the satellite armbar, to get the victory. Wins by submission. Averno has no choice but to tap out. Your winner, Místico. And I am going to throw out there, the match started relatively slow. I mean, it was really kind of like savoring. I feel like it was savoring the return of Cesar Duran. But it picked up pace, like picked it up very well. And like, so we got ourselves like a good lucha exhibition, good lucha match, woo, to be had, which we, like, I felt like we, you know, if you know your lucha, you knew you were going to get that from these two gentlemen. And they did not disappoint. As I said, it took a little bit of time. But like everything else in the show, like it's the, like the things get overshadowed by like the story now that's going wrong about it. This time is before the match even started, as we have the return of Cesar Duran. So we'll see how the Azteca Lucha Promociones Dorado feud ramps up with here, now that we have both our figureheads back in play. And before we get into our main event, we have two announcements. First of which, for Intimidation Games, it has been announced that Cesar has pulled some strings and is getting Mystico to challenge Rocky Romero for the MLW Middleweight Championship. And then at February 17th at Burning Crush is our February event. It is going to be a Bakle Brawl, Jacob Fatu, and Mads Kruger. So it looks like Fatu is definitely for sure having one more match in him for MLW before possibly walking out the door. If we go from here to Don King's Shambling Corpse, they wheeled that thing out once again. He is back. He is putting over Alex Kane. He says Kane is going to win because Beaumaye is for the people. Right on, man. Beaumaye is for the people. Wheel that Shambling Corpse back. Let it sleep for another 100 years. In the meanwhile, let's go to it. Let's have it. It is our main event of the evening, MLW World Heavyweight Championship. Satoshi Kojima, who made the MLW Championship a world championship, takes on the current championship holder, Alex Kane. Beaumaye versus Bread Club, that is what we are getting here tonight. Match starts off, Kojima is getting one up on Alex Kane with the graps, which is kind of surprising because Kane is a bit of a grappler. Like that is his MO with the suplexes and submissions. Kane, however, does take over, playing a little bit of the power game, and they fight outside the ring. Kane starts working the arm, which of course is very smart because Kojima's primary weapon is the lariat. Clubs to the back, and cocky pin number 4 only gets 2. This upsets Kojima greatly, and he fires back and they trade machine gun chops in the corner. Deadly drive by Kane as Kojima goes up to the top rope, stops all of Kojima's momentum. Kojima fires back with forearms and a DDT, but Kane answers with a Saito suplex. Ankle lock attempted, but Kojima gets to the ropes. Cutter out of nowhere by Kojima. Kane catches a lariat attempt into an exploder, follows it up with a German. The straps are down, ladies and gentlemen. Crash landing suplex, 4-2. Modified Kane Maker only gets 2, and Kane starts getting frustrated at this point. He wasn't happy that the crash landing only got 2. He was definitely upset that the Kane Maker only got 2. Mr. Thomas and Faye Jackson are trying to keep his head in the game. Kane goes for some sort of short arm maneuver. Kojima counters that into a short arm lariat, follows up with a brain buster, only gets 1 off that. Kojima's fired up. Kane is fired up. Kane eats a lariat though. And surprise, only 1 proper lariat. 1 proper lariat gives us a new MLW World Heavyweight Championship as Bread Club reigns supreme, our champion, Satoshi Kojima. Like everything else, before we get to it, I'll have my thoughts on it. This is like the one match that wasn't totally overshadowed by a return or some crazy thing happening after the match. It was a good match. I was really surprised like how easily they let Kane fall. Like, I figured it would take a bit more to take him out, to kind of like build the fact that he's been this fighting champion and like a very dominant force in the world title scene, and just like 1 Kojima lariat. Like, yes, they hit him. He hit him with like a short arm variation of it too, but like it took like 2 lariats to take Tom Lawler out. You know, just saying. And so I'm kind of surprised how easily Kane went down for that. He dogs out of the ring pretty darn quick after the match is over, though Kojima's going to get some mic time. You know, it was a solid back and forth match, and I'm definitely of two minds about this. Like, one, whereas I agree that it was probably time for Kane to lose the championship. He's had a good run. You know, he's had it since August. So, you know, he's got himself, you know, 6 month reign out of the dealio. So it's nothing to sneeze at. But I'm not entirely sure Kojima should have been the guy to do it. And I love Kojima. Kojima is one of my guys. I am a proud member of the Bread Club. I try to eat bread every day. But like, it kind of gets the, like, that to me, Kojima getting the win, like, despite its the historicness, and we'll talk about that momentarily, but it almost, like, giving Kojima the belt to me seems like you're playing like EWR or TEW, and you are losing, and you're giving the belt to someone that you kind of know is going to not leave you. Like, kind of like when I was playing and I had to give the belt to a 65-year-old Tito Santana because the WWE and TNA kept stealing my world champion as they held the belt. So I gave it to Tito Santana because I knew he wasn't going anywhere until he retired. You know, and that's kind of the feeling I got out of this. You know, I do feel like there could have been, like, some better options to drop the belt. Like, yes, I know, like, on one hand, like, MLW's got a good roster, a very good roster, very talented individuals, but they don't have too many folks left that have some of the big fight, like that you could feel that you could carry the company with. Though I would argue that, like, he probably should have dropped the belt to Holiday if they were looking to drop the belt, in a relative, you know, short fashion. They probably should have dropped the belt to Holiday. You know, I think also if Mance Warner has stayed around, like, you know, shenanigans things, give him the belt. Like, I think he'd be another guy that, like, MLW should be could be able to get behind if he would stick around, you know. But like, other than that, like, at a certain level, I do feel like that top tier talent, at least the people that are going to stick around and not cause problems, you know, is kind of thin. But that being said, like, I have, like, in terms of talent and, you know, and popularity, like, I really don't have that much problem for Kojima to take the belt. As I said, I'm a fan of him, I'm a fan of his work, and this is also very historic in the fact that he is now a two-time World Heavyweight Champion, the first in MLW history, like 22 years or so, like, or 20 years after his initial reign, he gets the belt back, which is crazy go nuts to me, and just crazy go nuts in general. So yeah, mixed bag out of that. We'll see how long Kojima holds it. Like, does he get to keep it for more than a taping cycle? Does he get to carry it for two taping cycles? You know, and what becomes of Kane after this? Because I mean, we look at, like, Hammerstone, and Hammerstone basically lost the title because he was half out the door, like, either metaphorically or physically. You know, that's up to interpretation. But he lost the belt and kind of effed off for like 3 months. Yeah. So what? And so the real, like, as I say, like a lot, one loss isn't necessarily a burial, but it's what you do in the follow up. And well, I want to see where Kane goes from here, how he rebounds from this loss. You know, does Beaumaye stop being about the people? Does Beaumaye, you know, become doubly for the people? Or does Beaumaye cease to functionally exist because they didn't help him when he needed? I don't know. We'll see. But while I'm talking, Kojima gets the mic. You know, he apologizes for his English. It's shit. His words, not mine. Points out that, you know, after 20 years, he has glory again. Yuji Nagata brings beer. And Kojima takes, like, one drink and is like, oh my god, I am drunk. Everybody drink beer, everybody eat bread. And just for historical fact, let you know, beer is liquid bread for most practical purposes, unless you're drinking IPA or something like, unless you're drinking IPA or Manders's beer of choice. Those two things are not very bready. But if you drink yourself a good lager or whatnot, you know, that is liquid bread, ladies and gentlemen. But we have a beer. He gets a beer bath. He's evidently drunk off of like two sips, which I find that hard to believe because dude's a carb guy. But, you know, whatever, man. The important thing is Bread Club reigns supreme. So we have that. And there's not a whole lot much to say, because I doubt there's going to be a fusion this week to help follow us up. So our next big event is the Crush, whatever it was that I'm not digging through my notes to go see. February Crush, that is what we'll call it. But otherwise, yeah, barring that, and I have to re-edit things. Thank you all for taking the time to listen. It's been fun. This event overall was a nice pick-me-up compared to January. Let's see if I can keep that momentum, even if I do quasi-question giving Kojima the belt. But we also have enough stuff going on in the meanwhile that if I wanted to sit down with Muffins Martinez, we could probably talk for like 3 hours about all the crazy stuff that and all the crazy comebacks that we had in this here show alone. So, I'm very excited to see where everything's going from there, and hopefully we can kind of move away from some of the controversies of how we started this year. So in the meanwhile, thank you all for listening. Stay tuned for the best ways you can help support this podcast and, you know, get some ad time in there, join the Patreon, get some merch and all that sort of good stuff. In the meanwhile, I'll catch you all next week. MLW Confusion is a weekly podcast that is written and performed by Rob Kammer and is hosted on Spotify for Podcasters. MLW Confusion is part of the Urban Wrestling Network. You can check out the Major League Pod, amongst other shows, on YouTube at Urban Wrestling NW. The background music for this section is Ruined My Day, performed by Alan Schroeder. If you enjoyed this podcast and like to support, please like, subscribe, and tell your friends, family, and enemies. Leaving a review is also helpful, as word-of-mouth advertisement is very important for small podcasts such as this. My social media links can be found in the description below, but Twitter and Instagram are at TheNovaOfCass, TheNovaOfCass, and Facebook is at MLW Confusion, all one word. If you'd like to support monetarily and help upgrade my equipment, please check out my virtual tip jar at www.kofi.com/Casanova. If you prefer more bang for your buck, you can go to patreon.com/Casanova, where for as little as $2, backers get access to the podcast early and ad-free, plus other weekly exclusive content such as athome.exe, the Patreon exclusive podcast. So, join the crew that is headed up by Keith Wynn, Alan Schroeder, Alex McCarthy, and The False Prophet, and check it all out. You can also find t-shirts, coffee mugs, and other merch at the Confusion Podcast store on Teespring. For business inquiries such as ads and sponsorships, please email at rzkammerer, that's K-A-M-E-R-E-R, @comcast.net. Thank you all for listening.